This is the Kinky Cast. This is an adult, sexually explicit podcast. If you are under 18 years old, please stop the podcast now. This is episode 7 of our weekly exploration in the kinky world of BDSM and alternative relationships. In today's episode, we have a guest that is expressing her opinion on Subfrenzy. Uncle Abdul brings part 2 on the Violet Wand, something from the mailbag, and a preview of BDSM Nightmares. Here's our hosts, Woody and the Beast.
Thanks, Max. Well, we're back for another exciting episode of the Kinky Cast, and here sitting next to me is the Beast. Hi, Beast.
Hi, Woody, and this does promise to be exciting. We have more lovely feminine flesh in our studio today.
How exciting is that?
Yes, and I just realized I probably will pay for that flesh comment at some point.
Yes, you will. I can tell right
now.
I
know that that my listeners out there will come and get me for that.
Yes, they will.
Oh, well, life has to be interesting. Well, with us, we have the lovely and rather new Gabrielle, and she has put together a article that's getting some attention on our popular web, FetLife, from the perspective of a relatively new submissive about this topic that we hear bantered about so much of Subfrenzy. Welcome, Gabrielle.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
What prompted you to write this article?
There was a short period of time where a lot of people were accusing me of being in Subfrenzy. And it was a term that I hadn't heard before. And I took it at its meaning because I tend to look at semantics, knowing that I am not one to frenzy and go into manic states and do things without thinking. It kind of bothered me that I was being labeled with this. So the more I thought about it and the more people accused me of it, the more irritated I got. So I started doing some research on it.
Yes, that word frenzied, I was talking with my primary partner the other day, and we considered that term, and it usually has a negative connotation, the word frenzy does. And that was what you found it to be, a negative word?
Exactly. I mean, it is defined in a negative way. Dictionary.com defines it as manic behavior, careless behavior, not thinking of your own well-being. That is a negative connotation to me. And so when I was labeled with this, knowing that I think things through before I act on things, it pissed me off.
And pissed off Gabrielle can be a dangerous thing, I would suspect, from listening to you.
So this pushed you into the writing mode to actually analyze this and put it out for other people's opinion, I guess.
Pretty much. I did one previous writing where it was basically just a rant. I'd gone out to a website that I had found a description of Subfrenzy, and it had a list of, you know, all these different scenarios. And as I read through the scenarios, not a single one of them applied to me. So I'm, you know, started trying to figure out, well, how exactly am I in Subfrenzy if none of this applies to me?
In your writing, you talk about the frenzy, and you give some examples from the DS world. Can you share some of those with us?
Absolutely. These were actually the examples that I'd come across. One is giving your submission to any dom that comes along to prove your submissiveness or to make yourself more attractive to him. Another is changing your personality or ideals in order to please him.
And you say him. I believe in your writing, you qualify this from the female submissive, male dom perspective, but this can be related to various other combinations of partners.
Absolutely. It can go from the female dom A to a male submissive. It can be in homosexual DS dynamics. It's across the board. I speak of it from a male dom, female sub dynamic, just simply because that's the one that I am most familiar with.
All right. Now, if you could go on, and what are some of the other examples?
Talking to someone online for 2 or 3 days and deciding you want to meet up with them, but rather than meeting at your local Panera Bread in a public area, you meet at his home or at your home in a private setting. Falling in love with someone you just have talked to two or three times. And then when you meet, they slap a collar on you. Immediately believing anything a dom tells you.
Of course, we're always right.
Well, okay.
Okay, thank you.
I know myself personally and a lot of other submissives tend to have some trust issues in the sense that we don't trust anybody.
And this is probably a very wise position. Now, you found that we have this term bandied around in the community, a sub-frenzy.
Mm-hmm.
But when you started in your writing, I saw that you realized that this has relations to the vanilla world, and these are just as much problematic in the vanilla setting as they are in the kink setting.
Absolutely. As I read through the examples and just really started looking at them, I noticed that pretty much every point that was made could be converted into the vanilla world. Meeting anyone that you've just talked to a couple of times online and just going off and deciding to meet them at their house and do whatever. That's not smart. You don't know this person. You don't know what they're capable of, what their background is, or setting up a safe call. Also, giving in to someone's will just to make yourself more attractive to them. Not a smart choice. Falling in love with someone within a few days of meeting them and then deciding, hey, let's get married. We know how successful those end up. And then also immediately believing what anyone tells you. You know, you meet someone online, they can tell you anything. They can be anyone. You have no idea and no proof.
I think they did a television series called Catfish on this very topic of people pretending to be somebody else and just to prank with somebody.
Well, there's not just that, but there's also the shows where you have pedophiles pretending to be 13-year-old boys and setting up dates with these 12-year-old girls.
So you can't believe everything you hear. But now back to your writing.
Mm-hmm.
You also took offense, I believe, in your writing and started considering this, that we apply this term to submissives,
mm-hmm.
but we don't seem to apply it towards the dominant. Why did your ponderings result in that thought process?
Well, I'd realized that I'd never actually heard the term frenzy applied to a top or a dominant. And I was curious about that. And I started talking to different people, some more experienced people in the lifestyle, some less experienced. And it came about that the more experienced people were the ones that were willing to acknowledge that tops or doms tend to go through a period of frenzy. Some of the people that I'd spoken with in the newer generation just said, no, tops and doms are completely in control. They don't go through frenzy.
I think the term play frenzy might apply here because it's whenever people are new, they're trying to get as much play as they can, whether they're tops, bottoms, sides, lefts, rights, whatever it is. And I'd also like to say something else here. We have said the term is sub-frenzy, and if you look it up online, it'll come up as sub-frenzy. I think the word bottom frenzy probably describes it better because once you're a submissive to somebody as opposed to just bottoming to anybody, you're probably going to have more fulfillment in your scenes and they won't be as frantic, unquote, as it would have been if you're just looking for play from anyone. And so as you graduate to someone's submissive, then you're moving to a higher ground. Is that correct?
I would think so. And that's actually one of the reasons why I touched on the terminology later in the writing about how it's sub-frenzy, but in all actuality, when you look at it from a semantic standpoint and you apply it to play, it really should be top frenzy and bottom frenzy. It should not be sub or dom frenzy because it tends to revolve around play.
Especially new play and that sort of thing. So when somebody's new to the scene, just coming in, they're looking for people to play with, or they're, quote, interviewing players, tops, bottoms, whatever they are. And so the term frenzy might appear to be in this type of environment.
I would agree with that. One thing that I had a problem with, though, is that being a new submissive, yes, I want to play. I want to play a lot, but I'm not going to play with just anyone that comes around. I sit back. I watch people play. I ask around about people that I might be interested in playing with. I get references. I don't just go out to the local dungeon and say, oh, he's cute. I want to play with him. I don't know anything about him. I don't know his play style. I don't know if he's safe. Making informed choices like that is not an indication of being in frenzy.
Now, you touched on playing with DOMs. In your research, you write about some of the problems that DOMs come into when they're new to this lifestyle, dominant personalities, the tops, come into. And what are some of those things that you uncovered as you're putting this piece together?
Well, one thing I noticed is that when new submissives or new bottoms come into the lifestyle, they don't tend to have an issue of finding partners. They can play with as many people as they would like to play with.
I think there's a term called fresh meat that we often use cruelly and with malicious. So continue.
Yes, that's a term I've heard quite often as well. It seems to be the complete opposite for a new top coming into the scene. He doesn't really get his choice of dance partners. Even though there's an influx of submissives coming in, there's not a huge influx of bottoms. It seems that a lot of the submissives that come in tend to get snatched up pretty quickly. So they have a hard time finding a play partner unless they are taken in by a mentor or are able to play with an experienced bottom. They would basically not have anyone to play with. In thinking about this, I noticed, well, wouldn't this lack of play on the part of the top tend to lead the top to frenzy because he or she would jump at any chance that presents itself?
And this can be just as dangerous for the top as the bottom that would agree to this situation.
I would say in some cases more so.
All right. Explain.
The bottom, while she or he has her own dangers, not knowing when to call a safe word, not knowing where her limits are, the top is actually the one that has the toys, the one that's inflicting the pain. The top could seriously injure a bottom if they do not know where to hit with a whip or how to even aim a whip. They could seriously injure someone in bondage if they don't know where to apply, say, rope bondage. They could do some serious nerve damage. They could not know how to hit with a flogger and do a kidney shot, and you've got damaged kidneys. There's a plethora of dangers. The more I thought about it, it seemed to me that the tops were in a bit more danger than the bottoms with the consequences.
The consequences of a top are potentially to walk away from somebody that they've damaged.
Well, potentially until that person that they've damaged calls the authorities.
Or blackballs them in the community.
My big concern, though, is calling authorities. I don't want a top, because he aimed wrong with a whip or whatever and caused the laceration, she or he ends up in the emergency room and then he's got an assault and battery charge against him. Or if she, you know, gets hit hard enough and bleeds enough, it could cause an extreme death. So there's an involuntary manslaughter charge. Same to go with bondage. There are stories out there of people that have been bound and ended up having heart attacks and epileptic seizures and so on and so forth.
So from your work on this piece, you have come to what conclusions that you would like our listeners to be more mindful of, particularly the new people or the people playing with new people? What are some of the things that we should be more concerned with?
Pay attention to what you're doing. Watch who you're going to play with. Get references for people that you're going to play with. And that goes for tops and bottoms, not just for bottoms. Communicate with who you're going to play with. Let them know, here are my, you know, physical ailments, or I have epilepsy, or I have a heart condition, or whatever. Talk to each other and let each other know so that there is a boundary there that people can watch out for. Let them know when I get to a point where I can't take it anymore, I need to be able to call a safe word. I don't need to have my arms and legs bound, have a blindfold and a gag in, and not be able to call a safe word.
But Gabrielle, you're taking away all the romance and excitement from this. You're making it sound like we need to think about this.
Well, maybe things in life need to be thought about.
You're saying that we need to think more and explore more of what we're doing instead of jumping in with both feet.
Well, the way I look at it is if you are going to place your life in another person's hands, yeah, maybe some forethought needs to go into that.
I know you're shattering the romantic beliefs of many of a newly found submissive female.
Well.
Now, in closing, I see in your article that you make some proposals about this whole term sub-frenzy. What are those proposals?
In my opinion, frenzy needs to be taken out of it. Frenzy needs to no longer be used unless it is an actual frenzied state when someone is being careless. Not paying attention to what they're doing, going crazy.
So you think that applying sub-frenzy to everybody that is new is a injustice?
Yeah, absolutely. Because I do believe that while common sense is rare nowadays, there are those of us out there that still use it. And when someone is just watching a person, they have no idea of the forethought that goes into what this person is doing. It's not fair to label them with a negative term. It's common to be excited when you come into a new lifestyle. I would be worried if a person wasn't excited about it. That does not necessarily mean frenzy. That means enthusiasm. That means fervor.
So you would change these terms to?
I would change them to enthusiasm at the least. But in my honest opinion, frenzy needs to be done away with and sub needs to be done away with.
So it's just enthusiasm.
Probably play enthusiasm.
Yeah.
And this is not a bad thing to be enthusiastic.
Mm-mm.
It's just we need to be more thoughtful about the experiences that we're jumping into.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Gabrielle, I want to thank you for coming to share this with us from a new person's perspective. Often we don't hear from new people in their perspectives in this lifestyle. We hear about the more veterans and appreciate a new voice.
Gabrielle, how long have you been in the lifestyle?
I've been in the lifestyle for just over 6 months.
Well, that should give some perspective as to where she's coming from with this article.
And I believe we'll have a link to this article on the website.
In our Hot Links page, you will see Gabrielle's name. Click on it, and it will take you to this article called
Curb the Enthusiasm.
And again, Gabrielle, thank you for coming in and sharing with us today.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
Join us now for part two of Uncle Abdul's interview on electric play, the Violet Wand.
One of the other types of electrical play is a Violet Wand, which is a whole different kind of electricity in the body. Can you describe that?
Yeah, the Violet Wand is an AC generator. The ones that are usually available are plugged into the wall. So you take house current and run it into your wand itself, which is essentially either a mechanical vibrator that chops the pulses or chops the AC, or a solid-state oscillator that produces pulses, and then it goes through two sets of transformers, the second transformer taking it up to a high voltage, anywhere from, let's say, 30,000 volts to 125,000 or 150,000 volts in a typical wand. And it's basically a Tesla coil. Now, Tesla coils, can go up to a couple of million volts. Certainly the laboratory ones would be able to do that. But the ones that you get for electrical play only get up to like about 150,000 volts. Now, the one thing I do tell everyone in my classes is that all electrical play involves some current through the heart. And that's even true with violet wands. The one experiment I do on that is what I call the balloon experiment. Well, actually, I use water bottles. If I take an empty water bottle and try to make a spark jump to the empty water bottle, let's say the size of an arm, you know, there's no spark because there's nothing to conduct the current to ground. But if I fill the bottle with water, then I can get a spark because the current then has a path through the water in order to get to ground. You're dealing with high voltage and high frequency, and so that's what makes the violet wand work. Now, on that, it winds up being that what saves you, what limits the energy, is that generally if you put one of the gas tubes in there or light bulb, is that the high voltage charges whatever gas is inside the bulb. That forces the electrons on the outside of the glass of the bulb to accumulate on the surface of the bulb. If you bring a grounded object like your finger or, say, your partner's nipple, then it sees that, oh, here I have a ground in order to jump to, and that's where you get the spark. It has to jump through the high resistance of the air. You don't get a spark more than like a quarter an inch or half an inch off of a bulb. So here you have energy loss in the gas, energy loss across the gap or across the glass, energy loss across the air, energy loss across the high voltage of your skin, and before it goes in through your body and then out to the ground, which is, you know, the floor or the wall or the table that you're laying on or whatever. It always has to complete a circuit. The high voltage is always seeking some path to ground.
Even if it's capacitive, just to a body that is a mass.
That's correct, right. And that's one advantage that you have with an AC device like a violet wand, is that you now can use capacitive effects, which essentially you can think of as a resistance called impedance. You know, it always is something that limits the amount of energy in the completion of the circuit.
One of the other things that I've found with violet wands is they produce at the arc itself, at the skin, a tremendous amount of ultraviolet light. And with that comes a sunburn.
Yes, because, you know, that arc is, well, basically a very hot plasma. And what you have is a very narrow plasma. So one of these days I'll be working, hope to work with a mathematician to figure out what the radiation energy of a very narrow column of hot plasma is, and how much energy, heat energy, is going towards the skin. But at any rate, you can certainly wind up, if you're playing with a violet wand, get like perhaps a first degree sunburn in the area, particularly if you keep it over an area. You know, you have the like reddening of a sunburn type of effect at the where the spark tends to stay at. Also, if you use something like a Wartenberg wheel or even like a household fork or the tip of a knife blade, you can cause second degree burns and even brand somebody just by the energy of the spark. Understand that the spark that you get out of there is a hot plasma. If you spread it out more, less heat energy gets to the skin. If you concentrate it more, more energy goes to the skin. And that's the secret of violet wand branding.
And so anytime you do this after the fact, use your standard after sun treatments, aloe vera, those sorts of things, to get the skin back to health again.
That's correct, right. Certainly the one thing that, and this is kind of true of any BDSM play, but probably more especially true of electrical play, is that, you know, you are dealing with internal body fluids. You're stressing the body fluid system somewhat more than with just ordinary BDSM play. So, replenishing the electrolytes, having somebody drink water is always a good thing in BDSM play. You might also want to consider an electrolyte replacement like a Gatorade or something like that, aftercare regimen. And, you know, certainly in aftercare, whatever your partner or you prefer as aftercare, always make sure that that's available because, you know, you want a happy bottom to want to do it with you next time.
We don't like to break our toys. We want to have them live to play Absolutely. Another day. Thanks, Unc. Talk to you soon.
Okay. Thank you, Woody.
Well, Beast, the mailbag is starting to rattle over here.
Well, Woody, let's see what's in there.
Cassie, what do you have for us today?
I am curious about humiliation and degradation. I find it a huge turn-on, especially dirty talk. Call me a fucking cum-dump, and I get all hot and bothered.
Oh, hello there. I like it, too.
Am I sick for liking it?
Well, how do you respond to that?
Well, Cassie, the way you're accenting some of those words, I think me and you need to have a date some evening.
No, wait a minute. I think her and Max are getting it on over there.
Oh, my. Max is quicker than I am. This is a very interesting topic. I wish we had Kate Kinsey in because Kate, I remember, has a very old writing. Kate's a feminist. And yet she enjoys much of this play about degradation and humiliation, even though she subscribes as a very active rabid feminist. So in your bedroom, I don't see a problem with whatever you like, as long as it's not affecting the way you live your life and are successful in your life. I think that's the definition of a problem is when it starts interfering with your real life. If it does interfere with your real life, enjoy it.
Well, many times in play spaces, you'll hear people want to use it as a turn-on to get them up and running.
I had Cassie come over to visit with me. Anyway, I agree with you, Woody. Many people find this a great way to be turned on and excited by their scenes or by the coming scene. No pun intended, a pre-ejaculatory moment. So I've been known to call my partners various names, including fucking piece of shit sometimes. And the orgasm is very entertaining. So I guess she liked it. The Beast is a misogynistic bastard.
But he's an honest one.
Actually, I'm a feminist at heart, too, so I'm not misogynistic. In the bedroom, I do tend to like to role play with my partners. If they don't like it, they probably aren't the right partner for me.
Well, we're both hetero males, and we both like our women, so it's all good.
Anything else in the mailbag?
It seems to be empty.
But that was one big chunk of mail, so I can see why it's rattling. All right, Woody.
Here's a preview of an upcoming episode that we're putting together, and it's called BDSM Nightmares. An old friend stopped by the studio today, and we were talking about BDSM Nightmares, and here's what she said.
Don't play with people that you don't know, and if you do, be prepared for surprises.
What kind of surprises?
I went to a large fetish convention in Florida, and it was before I had a dominant. I met some people, had a lovely dinner with them. We chatted through dinner, but didn't really know each other well. And in the course of the conversation, one of the people at the meal said, "Would you like to play in the dungeon after dinner?" And it sounded like a great idea. So we got back together after dinner and went into the public play space. And the convention was heavily attended, and people were throwing the fire alarm, so there were a lot of disruptions. They cleared the dungeon several times. I was restrained and on a spanking bench, and there really hadn't been a negotiation beforehand, which was a mistake. I didn't know anything about his play. He didn't know anything about my play. I am a stoic, which is they do not yell, they do not cry, they do not scream. They just take it. And a lot of people don't want to play with stoic because you don't get a lot of payback from that kind of play.
No wiggling, no moaning.
No, it's just it's maybe very unsatisfying for a lot of dominants, but it happens to be how my play is. I had been receiving flogging single tail and paddling for about 30 minutes when I actually did something I rarely do, which was to yellow. I said yellow, and he said in my ear, "I don't respond to safe words."
Should have told you something right there.
Yes, and I was in a predicament because I was handcuffed to the bench. I was already pretty far into subspace, so it was getting difficult for me to even respond. And for me, when I get that to that place, I have a lot of difficulty voicing, and I have a lot of difficulty recognizing when my body might be in trouble. So I didn't know what else to do except continue to take it, and I just tried to go into a mental place where I could take it. And he continued to paddle me with heavier implements and using canes, which are fine. All of the implements were fine. It was just the intensity of it. I could feel blood running on my back. I had a corset on, and I could feel the skin around above and below the corset and on my legs becoming very raw, and I could feel blood running. At one point, I reached out and I touched his leg to try to get a response because I couldn't voice it anymore. And he whispered in my ear again, "Oh, now you're really in trouble."
Oh, no.
It was more of the same for a long time. And finally, about an hour and a half into the session, the dungeon monitor came over and stopped it. He was not pleased. He walked over to the side. He spoke to someone and then came back and whispered in my ears, "I've sold you. You're only worth $25. And he left.
That must have terrified you right there.
Well, it's terrible for a woman to only be worth $25.
You've been discounted.
Luckily for me, the person that he sold me to is a kind and gentle soul. He helped me get extricated from the bench. And when he walked out into the light and saw the damage that had been wrought, he took my room key, took me to my room, helped me to clean up the blood, and he sat with me for several hours until I at least could go to sleep. Well, I saw the person that sat with me one more time the next day for just a few minutes, but I never saw the person that I played with. So he doesn't even know the extent of the damage that he wrought. It was a dark room. You couldn't really see. There was not enough lighting to be able to see the status of the person you're playing with. He didn't know anything about the outcome, and that's I'm very disappointed by, because I really think he needed to see that. Maybe he would have been happy. I don't know.
Well, and the things you did right here were play in a public play space.
Right.
Lots of people around you. Dungeon monitor on duty. But they didn't stop the scene when it was getting too intense.
I found out later that the philosophy was you didn't stop the scene unless there was clear signs of injury or you're interfering with someone else's play.
Well, that didn't help you at all.
No. So I think my biggest mistake was to play without clear ideas for the person that was playing me, that I don't respond in the normal way. And then that's something that I have since become very acutely aware of doing every time I play with anybody. I always make sure they know I'm not going to scream, wiggle, holler, and do all of those things. And so if that's what you're looking for, I'm not the girl for you.
And something else to do is maybe check out some references if you can find out who you're playing with.
Right. And I did find out later on that this is kind of like an MO. That's all I know. I was able to find out later that they kind of trolled and picked people up, and that's how they got playmates, because he didn't have a lot of playmates, I guess, there at that location, because a few people knew how rough the play was.
Wouldn't it be nice if somebody would have come up to you and said, "Watch yourself"?
Sure would have been.
And with us, we have the lovely Anne, who has a story of her own BDSM nightmare to share with our listeners. Hello, Anne.
Hello.
Tell us about this encounter you had some years ago when you were relatively new. Tell us about it.
Yes, I was rather new back in, I think it was about 2000, the summer of 2000, and I was talking to a lot of people on the internet, and I started talking to someone who I really liked. He gave me his phone number so I could call him, and we talked for a couple weeks, and we made some arrangements to meet. He was going to come to my town, and he lived about 2 hours away, and we scheduled some time to meet in a public place. I knew I was supposed to meet in a public place, and I was all excited about meeting this man who I'd been talking to for several weeks. And as I was getting ready that day to go on this date, someone started knocking on my front door.
The front door of your home?
The front door of my home. And in my home at that time were my children. So I went to the door and opened it and saw this gentleman out there, and I'm like, oh no, this can't be. And
have you seen a picture of the gentleman you were expecting?
No, I had not seen a picture.
Okay.
So I stepped out onto the porch and started talking to him and said, we were supposed to meet, you know, in an hour, not here at my house. He said, oh, but I was so excited. I just couldn't wait to come up here and see you.
This is getting a little scary.
It was getting scary. I was very nervous because I was home alone with my children, and I'm thinking, how do I get this man away from my house? He had already broken my trust because we had agreed to meet at a public place, not at my home. So I step out into the yard and sort of walk him to his car. He's still trying to build some trust with me.
The question, how did he find you at your home?
Well, I later learned that I was talking on a landline, and he used the internet to do a reverse lookup.
Oh, my.
Yes. So he found my address. He had my name. He had everything with my phone number because he had caller ID when I called him. I thought that was going to be safe because I was calling him. I go out into the yard and start talking to him, and he begins to try to show me that he could be trusted. So he's pulling out his ID, and he wanted to show me his ID, and he was talking about the car he was driving and that sort of thing. So I'm looking at this ID, and it's an ID that I'd never seen before because I couldn't understand what it was, and it was a parole ID.
A parole card?
It was a parole card, yes. So he begins to explain to me that he had just gotten out of prison because he had been sentenced to prison for bank robbery.
Bank robbery?
Yes.
Oh, my. You know how to pick them, don't you?
Well, yes, I do.
I hope your future contacts have been better.
They certainly have. I've learned to be a little bit more discreet how I communicate with people.
Did this gentleman get the rest of the date?
Well, like I said, I needed to figure out how to get him away from my house. So I agreed to have him follow me to another location. Basically, all he was wanting was some sex.
Did you give him sex?
I did, to get rid of this man.
Oh, I do adore women like you.
But it was a very scary situation, and it taught me a valuable lesson that it takes more than just a phone call to learn about a person. He traveled 2 hours to my house, knocked on my front door with children in the house, and he broke that trust. So I learned a valuable lesson there. I learned that I needed to be more discreet in allowing people into my world.
That is a very scary, scary story. And I'm very glad you're here today to tell us about it.
Well, thank you.
Glad in more ways than one. Good to have you, Ann.
Thank you.
It's been a very interesting evening and a very entertaining one. The mailbag was interesting, but Gabrielle was even more interesting.
As a preview for our new episode coming up, that's going to be a fun one. So we want everybody to send in your BDSM nightmares. Send us an email of your BDSM nightmares, or you can send it via Bashful, so it's completely anonymous, because some of these BDSM nightmares are you. We don't need to know who you are. And if you do want to talk about it, drop us a voicemail at 916-KINKY69. Max says it better than I do.
Really, I would encourage anybody that's brave enough to call in. It lends some weight to your story, and people can learn from your experiences.
This is an educational show, and we really want people to not have to go through some of the things that some of the people that you hear on the show have had to learn the hard way. With that, I have to say good evening, Sir Beast.
Good evening, Woody, and have a good week.
Thank you, Beast. You have been listening to Episode 7 of the Kinky Cast. We want to hear from you. We also want to hear your BDSM nightmares, so email us, questions@kinkycast.com, or call and leave a voicemail at 916-KINKY69. If you leave a contact number, we will try to reach you to join us on the show. Some listeners want to remain completely anonymous, so we have the Bashful tab on our webpage. Just type your message and hit send. The Kinky Cast is a production of Rooster in the Round. On behalf of Woody, the Beast, and Cassie, I'm Max. See you next week.